From the studios of WRPI Troy, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when you mix the two, and where, like any respectable little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host for the next hour as we explore this world of the high tech. Stay tuned. Little Brother, Episode 12, dated 13th of July, 2001, is right around the corner. Welcome to episode 12 of Little Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter. The phone lines here at WRPI Studios, area code 518-276-6248. Please feel free to call in at any time. Even if I've gone by a topic, you're welcome still to call in on that topic. So I'll take calls on any topic that I discuss tonight and anything you want to talk about. Give us a call, 518-276-6248. Before we get too carried away, need to advise you that the opinions and views expressed on this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of the WRPI staff and management, the RPI Student Union, or Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Okay, so some headlines here. First item up we have, apparently Fiji gets to relive Y2K. A programming error resulted in the deletion of all Fiji government accounts for the year 2000 and the postponement of official audits. There is reportedly some speculation about a cover-up of a mismanagement or abuse of taxpayer funds, although the simple solution of a screw-up seems likely. The information system dates from the mid-1970s. Presumably, the various 52 government ministries and departments can retransmit the relevant data. That comes to us from the computer, the Agence France-Presse, and from the Fiji Times. A computer whiz kid has been fined £2,000 in the UK for hacking into the United Arab Emirates' only internet provider and causing the whole country's system to crash. Lee Ashurst, 22, originally from Oldham in Greater Manchester, was convicted of misusing equipment, services, or facilities provided by Emirates Telecommunications Corporation, Etisalat. Ashurst, who works for a construction company in the Gulf, is now facing a compensation claim of more than £500,000, approximately $650,000, from Etisalat after the Dubai Court of First Instance transferred his case to the civil courts. He was working as a computer engineer at Dubai construction firm in May last year when he began hacking into Etisalat's systems. According to the Gulf newspaper, the court has told the entire United Arab Emirates internet system crashed on several occasions over a month. Edward Rudsky, whose hobby shop in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, opened in the mid-1960s, just received a bill from Canada Post for $480 million Canadian, roughly $310 million US, for transactions supposedly having taken place from 1906 to 1928. The actual transactions were 9 parcels from a month ago, but the dates and dollar amounts were wrong. Canada Post says the problem occurred when they attempted to merge 60 databases into one. David Winfrey writes in, he has a program called ClearSpace that clears the unused space on his hard disk. When he used it at work, it was set to fill the entire space with the company name and phone number. Recently, he writes, I got a new edition of Microsoft Visual C++ Compiler version 6, introductory edition. Today, after compiling a program of the Hello World level of complexity and finding that the resulting program was well over 100 kilobytes, I went to the DOS prompt and looked at the .exe file with a hex editor to try to find out why it was so big. I was surprised to find property of Acme widgets 301555 1212 inside the .exe file. The compiler had obviously just grabbed a big chunk of disk space and stuffed it into the file without bothering to clear it first. If that particular chunk of disk space had been used for something confidential, and if this were the production version of the compiler that allows redistribution of executables, the intro version doesn't, although this restriction is somehow omitted on the outside of the package, then 60 kilobytes of company plans, source code, spreadsheets, customer lists, or whatever could have been burnt onto a CD and shipped to customers around the world. Anyone compiling programs with MSVC may want to examine the output closely for data that should not be there. On July 2, 2001, a reporter for a local newspaper wanted to check his online account with the Berliner Sparkasse. Imagine his surprise to find lots of interesting data about an account and loans, except they weren't his. About 50 persons could not access their own accounts. They were presented with data from other people. The bank assures us that no funds could be transferred. It was just, quote-unquote, possible to see how much money was in the accounts and to see the last transactions. They immediately removed the online banking system from the net. The official problem source, according to a spokesperson from the bank, was strain on the systems. The company DEFCON Security worked feverishly to get it back online by Tuesday, but forgot that they had fooled with the certificates. Users were presented with a screen warning them that the certificate was issued by a company that was not classified as trustworthy. Maybe it's time for these people to change banks. That one comes to us from Deborah Weber-Wolf from Berlin. Ray Todd Stevens submits to us that he witnessed an interesting failure mode during a recent shopping trip. The store had some of the motorized chair shopping cart setups for customers who need them. They're all lined up against the wall, facing out, and plugged into the wall charging. All was well until the power failed. When the power failed, all of these units took off, and most ran into things before the staff could stop them, trailing their cords behind them. I asked about this. It seems that there are several of what appear to be glaring design flaws in the units. First, the stopped position on the handle is not the default position. Instead, the control is all the way down for forward and all the way up for reverse and halfway in between for neither, meaning that the natural position is forward. There's also a foot brake, but it has to be pushed to stop. And of course there's a power switch, but it must be turned on to charge the unit. What you do to charge the unit is plug it in and then turn on the power. The fact that it's receiving outside power switches it to charge mode, and the unit will not go anywhere. Now here comes the power failure. All of these units, about seven of them, are turned on, brake off, and in forward. They seem to assume that no electricity means that they are now to take off and do so driverless. Interesting failure mode. And in this time of more and more backup power for computers, this is one we should remember. Here's an interesting one that comes to us from the Netherlands. The IACR, or International Organization of Cryptology Research, has someone on its board of directors named Don Beaver. The direct result of this is that the recent IACR newsletter, a 34K document full of relevant news on cryptologic community, was rejected by the company Firewall because his name was in there too many times. It also contained other so-called dirty words such as latex, hardcore, and so on. The IT department told me that the message would not have been rejected if it was split in two, since the number of dirty words would have been halved. Well, I guess cryptology was to prevent us from this kind of misery. So here's your opportunity to put in your 2 cents worth. Give us a call. Area code 518-276-6248. Call about any topic that you've heard, any topic you will hear, and anything else you want to talk about, because I'm all ears. This next item comes to us from CNET. Letting even one copyright song slip through Napster's file-sharing system is unacceptable, according to a federal judge on the landmark copyright case. U.S. District Judge Marilyn Hall Patil, during a closed-door session Wednesday, ordered Napster to remain offline until it can show that it is able to effectively block access to all copyrighted works on its network. According to a transcript of the session between Napster and the record industry, Patil also said that the company would have to get authorization from the court before it resumes service. Napster said it would appeal the ruling. Additionally, the session transcript revealed that Napster has reached a settlement with the artists Dr. Dre and Metallica, who independently sued Napster, claiming the service was allowing people to illegally trade their copyrighted songs. During the hearing, an attorney for the recording industry said the suits had been resolved and Napster confirmed the settlement. Under the terms of the settlement, Napster agrees to block access to unauthorized copies of Metallica and Dr. Dre songs. In exchange, Napster said Dr. Dre agrees to make songs available once an acceptable business model is in place. Napster also said it would work with Metallica to develop such a model. Napster attorney Stephen Cohen said that the company's new system was preventing 99.4% of copyrighted works from being traded on the system. Quote, "We are approaching a system that has a zero rate of error," Cohen told Patil during the hearing. "And according to what the engineers tell me, you will never get a zero, because that would assume human perfection, and humans are not perfect." Cohen also pointed out that the music industry itself has uncovered only 174 copyrighted works out of 950,000, or 0.02%, slipping through the system. But music industry attorney Russell Frackman told Patil that just one unauthorized song on the system could have deleterious effects on an artist because it could be distributed to millions of people. The law does not tolerate any infringement. Okay, it looks like we may have a caller on the line here, so let's see what we have here. Okay, it seems like our caller disappeared. But if that was you, please feel free to call back again. We have another caller. Hello, caller, you're on Little Brother. Caller, are you there? Hello? Ah, there you are.
Hello.
Hello.
I got a question.
I got an answer.
Who wants copies of Metallica songs anyway? I mean, Dr. Dre, Metallica. Why don't they have any, like, good songs on Napster or something? I don't know. I've never been there myself. But why trade Metallica songs?
Well, obviously somebody out there does actually want the songs. And the way Napster is configured, basically what gets traded is what is in individual people's personal collections. The concept is that, or was rather, that if you were a Napster user, you would fire up Napster, you would actually get a program from Napster, which you would run on your computer. It would explore looking for MP3 files and would submit to the Napster servers a list of those files that it found, and those files are available for trade. What happens then is somebody else connecting in can go to the list, find a file, and if it's on your computer, the Napster server gives your computer gives this other user contact information for your computer. The two computers hook up and do the exchange. So its content is actually entirely driven by people's tastes, and apparently there is enough of a flavor for Metallica out there that in fact Metallica was getting traded.
Okay, let me see. I had another thing on the 2600 show.
Sure.
They were discussing surveillance cameras and such.
Yes, they were.
You know what I wanted to just point out is, I'm sorry, I'm here at work and there's somebody who keeps bothering me because they know I'm on the phone.
Right.
But anyway, there's I work in an office, which is in Albany, Schenectady, or Troy, one of those places.
Sure.
And somebody came up with the idea without much thought. That because I'm not sure why. I think it was because some of the workers were scared of working in a downtown area.
Mm-hmm.
So they put about 4, 5, 6 cameras out in front of the building and just pointed them in random directions. And it's interesting because, you know, nobody seems to have worried about this much. But, you know, I'm not quite certain what purpose they serve. But every once in a while somebody will call them up and say, somebody broke into my car in the parking lot. Can we borrow your videotapes? Or something like that. I know one of our cameras for a long time was on watching the lines to get into one of the popular college bars in whatever city I may happen to be in. And
I wonder why.
Well, actually, it wasn't me. It was the late night guard thought that that was a good
thing
to check out.
Sure, it was.
But anyway, so like surveillance cameras are out there.
Oh, yes, there are a lot of surveillance cameras out there. I don't have any statistics on the U.S., unfortunately. I get the impression that we are watched quite frequently. I do have statistics on the U.K. They are supposed to be the single most surveilled society in the world, and actually I mentioned that 3 weeks ago in the last program. There are enough cameras in the U.K. that there is one for every 40 citizens. Now, you can't tell me based on that George Orwell was wrong. He was just a little bit, he just guessed a little early, that's all. But yes, there are a lot of cameras out there, and you do have to watch your back from time to time. They're not always obvious either. I went into one of the local grocery store chains, and this particular grocery store is in downtown Schenectady. And what I noticed when I walked into the store this one particular time, I walked into the store all the time. It's right near where I live, so. But I wander in and out of there quite frequently, and I wandered in there this one time, and something caused me to look up. And when I looked up, I noticed there were not one, not two, not four. You ready? 28 video cameras covering the front, maybe one quarter of the store.
28 video. Oh, okay. Was that the Price Chopper on Eastern Parkway, perchance?
That would, in fact, be the one.
Ooh, okay, okay. I someone I knew once worked there. That's a terrible place.
But
okay.
But yes, that.
That's not the opinion of the station, by the way.
No, no, of course. As I've said before, every opinion expressed here is those of the participants, not of the station, the station ownership, or our gracious hosts at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. But incidentally, for those who may be listening to this show and off of the internet, who would not have heard the episode of Off the Hook that preceded, that program can be picked up at www.2600.com, and that was the episode for this past Tuesday. What's Tuesday's date? Do you have that off the top of your head?
Tuesday's date. Today's the 13th, so Tuesday was the 10th.
10th? Okay, yep. Yes. So you would be looking for the episode for July 10th of Off the Hook, and again, that's at www.2600.com. That way, those of you who are listening to the show, either off the internet or in syndication, can pick that show off of the internet and understand what my caller here is talking about, or referring to, rather.
I got a second thing maybe you can just talk about if you happen to know anything about it.
Go ahead.
Okay, a friend of mine has his phone all screwed up, and he lives over in Rensselaer.
Mm-hmm.
Rensselaer on the other side of the Hudson. So anyway, what we discovered was that I couldn't call him, but he could call me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he happened to call me on a phone that has a little screen on it, so I can check out the caller IDs.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote down the number, which wasn't his number, and then I called that number, and it turns out he's getting calls for that number. So his mother dialed his home phone number,
mm-hmm,
and got some man who said, no, I'm not going to tell you my number.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went and checked out the number that he was receiving calls under using, reverse directory, where people can look up phone numbers and find out who they belong to,
mm-hmm,
on the internet. And lo and behold, that belongs to a third person, and I don't know. It's a wonderful thing.
Well,
can we blame Verizon, or does this just happen sometimes? Or?
We can, in fact, blame Verizon for this one, because that would appear most likely to be their mistake. The question I would have for you is this. Do the different phone numbers all go to the same general area?
No, that's a thing. I mean, we looked up one of these numbers, and it was in downtown. He's in Rensselaer, but the number's in downtown Albany. We were trying to decide if we were making jokes about mailing the woman a postcard or something, saying we're getting your phone calls over here in Rensselaer. But
was one of the numbers a 477?
I think there may have been one.
I think there is some sharing of the central office in Albany. I believe part of Rensselaer is switched by the Albany central office.
Oh.
But I don't know that for absolute sure. If anybody out there listening does know, you can call us too. The number again, 518-276-6248. I'm keeping you on, though. The thing of it is, this is the telephone network is really very vast, and in the past maybe 10 years or so, it has really kind of exploded growth wise. This is the reason why you're seeing the introduction of a bunch of new area codes. The first and most obvious one of the new ones to come in was the toll-free 888 area code, and what makes these area code numbers different from the previous generation ones? The previous generation, it was always required that the second digit of an area code be either a 0 or a 1, and that the second digit of your phone number not be a 0 or a 1. And they managed to find a workaround to revamp the system so that it can, without that extra wedge there, tell the difference between an area code and a phone number, so that you dial one in front of a number if you're dialing the area code now. Before, if you dialed a one in front, it meant that you were calling long distance, regardless of whether it was in the same area code or not. They brought in this whole slew of new area codes that have been popping up all over the place. I know, for example, there's area code 770 is down in Georgia somewhere. There's an area code 845 in downstate New York. I know that area code 716 is getting ready to do a split as well. They're going to put leave Buffalo in 716, and Rochester's going to have a new area code. And this explosion in the growth of the telephone network has made it so that it's impossible to guarantee that. I just don't think the phone companies can keep up with the growth. That's basically what it comes down to. And they do get confused, and they are only human, so they do make mistakes.
I had a friend in China once who was saying that her family didn't have a telephone because they'd run out of numbers.
Well, that was the situation that the U.S. was facing. At this point in time, they've expanded it enough that for the moment we're okay. I do know that when we get to a certain point, they've got a plan already in place to move ahead. I've spoken about it here before. They're going to start requiring, and they are starting to do this in some larger cities, they're going to start requiring that when you make a phone call, you dial a 10-digit number instead of a 7-digit number, even if it's your next-door neighbor. This will enable them to put different area codes right next door to each other. Then, if you look, you will notice that there are no area codes that have a 9 for the second digit. And what I think they are planning to do is introduce a system where they're going to start putting an additional 3 or 4 digits in front of your 10-digit number, and that will be your new area code. And your old area code will simply become part of your number, just as the exchange code is now. And you only have to look around, really, to see why this happened. Your typical office will hog up easily hundreds or thousands of phone lines. It's a different phone line a separate phone number for each person for each person's desk. There are not that many places that are still using extensions. Everybody's carrying a cell phone. Everybody's carrying a pager. They got a phone at their house. They got a fax machine maybe at their house. Maybe they got a computer at their house. Each one of these has got its own line, perhaps. I know sometimes they don't. Sometimes they combine them into one, but a lot of people don't do that because it's inconvenient. And so, yes, we do face the potential for running out of phone numbers, and that's why they keep coming up with these kludges to expand it. And the network is growing so fast, like I say, I just don't think the phone companies can keep up with it.
Here's just a thought. I don't know. It just came to me. Okay, what if they were to switch from a 10-digit system to some sort of hexadecimal system or something?
Well,
use maybe a computer keyboard with all the letters or something, so you'd get like the old-style numbers, dial 716 cat food or something. I don't know.
Well, it's an interesting concept.
That was the first non-obscene word that came to mind.
Well, it's an interesting concept.
Why cat food? I don't know.
On the older system, what they had used was they used a mnemonic word to identify the first two digits of the phone number. For example, area I grew up in was
Flatbush 409. Wasn't there some TV show?
Well, the area I grew up in was Rogers 7. So what would happen is you would pick up and you would dial RO7 and then
Roger
the
seven.
other four digits.
Is that any relation to Gary 7 from that old Star Trek episode?
I rather doubt it.
Okay.
And but the problem is those two letters do translate to actual digits on your phone. The R is on the 7, the O is on the 6, so the phone number actually began with 767, and I just gave away my pedigree. What the problem would be with going to a hexadecimal system, the problem would be that you only have 12 buttons on your phone right now. And that's if you have a phone with buttons on it. There are still a few holdouts that are actually using rotary dials. I know one. He is family, and he's in that same 767 area. With only 12 buttons on your phone, how are you going to dial an A, a B, a C, or a D? Now, there is an answer to this. The standard that's used to define the tones that you hear when you push the buttons does include room for four more buttons, which are commonly tagged when they're used, A, B, C, and D. But you would have to retrofit these buttons onto every phone in the entire country if you were going to start before you could even hand out the first phone number using them.
Oh.
You follow the logic?
Yep.
The idea is everybody's got to be reachable from everywhere else. And if you do that, if you put that wedge in there and you start issuing phone numbers that use it before making sure that every phone in the country has been retrofitted or that there's some sort of a workaround, you're going to have some really angry people out there. But I don't think that a hexadecimal phone number would I don't think that people would go for it anyway, even if all these extra buttons were standard. Yeah, I know. No, I think the only answer is to go to more digits. And I'm actually quite pleased with one thing about this country is that we have, or at least this country's phone system, is that we have managed to keep a consistent length phone number. All of the phone numbers in the entire network are 10 digits right now. If you go overseas, that is not the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, what was my other question for you? Oh, just I think I'm going to get off the phone soon. But I am contemplating reading Bruce Sterling's The Hacker Crackdown. Ever read it? Do you have an opinion?
Yes. I recommend that book extremely highly.
Okay. I've just been reading some of his fiction. And it's for people who aren't aware, Bruce Sterling is a science fiction writer, a new one and a good one, and what did I just read by him? I don't even remember the title of it, but it was a collection of short stories that was just...
Yes, I've read the Hacker Crackdown maybe three or four times. Excellent book. Very highly recommended to anybody that is interested in the computer scene or even vaguely interested in civil liberties.
Okay, even though it's a bit dated, or is it a bit dated?
It is a bit dated, but I don't see that as a problem because it describes a lot of the common common tactics on both sides of the aisle, but mostly on the law enforcement side. And as far as I have been able to tell, from the law enforcement side, we have not become a kinder, gentler nation. Just ask Bernie S. Mm-hmm. Or better yet, ask Kevin Mitnick. Kevin Mitnick was locked up for nearly 4 years before he ever saw the inside of a courtroom. Why? Because he was guilty of hacking, or rather, he stood accused of hacking. Nobody had actually gone to the trouble of discerning whether or not he actually was guilty until 3 and some change years later. At which point they sentenced him to time served plus a couple of months and let him go on probation.
Mm-hmm.
Really ridiculous situation and really, really, really disgusting. I think hackers are an oppressed class.
Well, that's another thing I was wondering about when they were talking about on the 2600 show. Would the I didn't quite follow what they were saying because I lacked the context in the background. But they were saying something about a couple clowns who appeared on MTV or something. And then they said, well, these people aren't really part of the hacker culture. What do they, you know, at the risk of sounding corny, what do they consider to be the hacker culture? I mean, what is it? Just
they are the hacker culture. The person that was hosting that program is Manuel Goldstein. That is a pseudonym. His real name is not a great secret. Anybody with a half a sense and a small amount of detective skills can probably work out what his real name is by looking around. But he does that program once a week, and that comes out of WBAI on Tuesday evenings. He does also runs a magazine, 2600, which is what you were referring to, which is referred to as the Hacker Quarterly. The hacker community, probably the best definition for the hacker community is that we are the curious. We're the ones who are curious enough to go digging, maybe admittedly in some places where we should not to be, but we mean no harm, you know? When you get into the ones that come in with criminal intent, those are not hackers. Those are opportunists and criminals.
Okay. All right. Just trying to figure all that stuff out.
Yeah, I know it can be. I know it can be a little difficult sometimes to figure out where the line is drawn.
Particularly when you deal with a phone company. When you deal with these really big companies. Who was it? That's a problem with some of these people. Somebody was sending me email, and because I'm a writer, he thought I should help him get published, and it was one of those things. Some of the emails you get from people like that are a little bit strange. And this guy was telling me how he'd come up with a brilliant system where he was stealing. I don't know what the system was. I can't verify this was true, but his email said he was stealing like a penny from every $1,000 at the insurance company where he worked. And I wrote him back and said, well, if you're really doing that, why do you want to tell people?
Why do you want to tell people, and why do you care about publishing it? Because
nobody knows how smart I am.
Well, the thing of it is, you said you were a writer, and how good of a living do you make writing?
I don't.
Bingo.
That's why I sit in this building in downtown Schenectady, Albany, or Troy, looking at these cameras, checking out the people, you know.
Yes. At any rate, a couple of years ago, MTV did an alleged documentary on the hacker culture. And really, in true mainstream media fashion, they went for all the hype and didn't worry about letting themselves get confused with any facts. And you did get the people who just wanted the free ride on all of the interviews. And I think if you actually watched the the program, you would be left with the impression that hacking is about a bunch of people walking in slow motion, because that's what most of the footage of this program was. Why? I have no earthly idea. At any rate.
Okay, well, I don't
even... Yeah, go ahead.
I should get off the phone here.
Very good.
Well, I'll let you go. Just if your listeners are on, have you announced that the Backstreet Boys tour was canceled?
No, I had no...
AJ had to go into rehab because he was feeling too tense and drinking too much and suffering anxiety, depression, and alcohol overuse. So the Backstreet Boys show has been canceled mid-tour.
I see. Well, it's certainly a public service worth announcing.
And people might be able to get their songs on Napster next to Metallica.
I wouldn't count on it. I think that, for the most part, Napster is dead at this point in time.
But you can still get MP3s on the internet.
Yeah, there are other mechanisms out there.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, I'll let you get going then.
Well, I will turn back on my radio.
Very good.
All right.
You might be able to hear the tail end of yourself speaking.
Oh, one of the people here at work was thrilled to hear me on the radio. I had to keep waving to her, turn that down. All right. Goodbye.
All right. Okay, and... I'm going to do something here that Emmanuel Goldstein did about a year ago when that so-called documentary from MTV came out. I've played this song here before. I'm going to play it here again. This is the Dead Kennedys on WRPI Troy. Listening to WRPI Troy. Okay, sorry about the delay there. You get a song going like that, you've got to crank it up, you've got to get into it, it's as simple as that. And I forgot where I was. Okay, I have an item here from the Denver Post. They're saying, first it was the photo radar van snapping pictures of Denver area speeders. Now some fear Big Brother's roving eyes soon will be watching all of Colorado with the arrival of a new European import called face recognition. The Department of Motor Vehicles, in an effort to prevent identity theft and driver's license fraud, is buying cameras that will map every driver's facial characteristics like a three-dimensional land chart. The danger, say critics, is that the technology could eventually be expanded to monitor the comings and goings of ordinary Coloradans. This week, Tampa, Florida became the first city in the United States to install similar high-tech security cameras on public streets to scan crowds in the city's nightlife district. Images will be compared against a database of mugshots of people who have active warrants. There is a danger, said Representative Matt Smith, a Grand Junction lawmaker and attorney who serves on a statewide task force studying the issue of privacy. The intended purpose of facial recognition is to help the state prevent the theft of identity. Now the question is, what will its future use be? There has to be a point where the government doesn't want its nose over every shoulder, he said. Older driver's license photos will be scanned into a computer database using the new technology. Then, starting next July, new mugs will be compared with those on file to make sure that they are who they say they are when they go to get or renew a Colorado's driver's license. It doesn't matter if you gain 200 pounds and go bald between photographs. Short of plastic surgery, the camera will recognize you. Facial recognition deals with spatial details where a nose is compared with the eyes, said Dorothy Dahlquist, spokesman for the Colorado Department of Revenue. Baldness doesn't count, and weight doesn't either. It's the basic facial structure. The state legislature authorized the technology during the last session. State officials won't disclose the cost of the system until they meet later this month with officials from Polaroid, one of the companies involved in creating the system. In the beginning, face recognition will be used to try to prevent criminals from obtaining multiple driver licenses under others' names, Dahlquist said. We know of cases where individuals steal personal information from other people, forge documents, and go to 6 or 7 driver license offices getting licenses with their picture and other people's identities. In theory, they have a legitimate license, but in actuality, they are not who they say they are. Now we will be able to say after the first one, no, you can't have another one. Or the police could be called in. My guess is if we saw something that is an egregious misuse of the system, we might alert law enforcement to that, she said. The cameras can't prevent the types of fraud that now occur when people make their own driver's license using home computers and the internet. However, as part of the new program, invisible markers will be added to each new license so that stores or banks can scan the card to see if it's genuine. The technology has raised concerns about privacy, ethics, and government intrusion. Privacy advocates are concerned that a database of photographs could itself spill into the Orwellian realm. We all want to catch as many criminals as we possibly can, but we also have to be concerned about the privacy issues, said Senator Ken Gordon, a Denver Democrat, a member of a state task force set up to craft legislation aimed at protecting privacy. Information obtained for one purpose is sometimes used for reasons that were not contemplated by the people who set up the system to begin with. Gordon said Colorado already sells driver's records to the insurance companies for $5 million a year. If we're going to create a database of photographs of every driver in Colorado, will it be used only to protect against criminals, or will it be used for commercial purposes or marketing to produce books of people's photos? We have to be careful. Colorado's new system could pave the way for expanded use, say, for instance, the tapping into a criminal database and finding out if someone getting a driver's license is a fugitive. I'm sure that law enforcement would appreciate it sometime in the future, said Dahlquist. Right now, we're not hooking into their data process. We're trying to protect citizens against identity fraud and businesses, too. But some say this latest technology could continue to grow into a Tampa-like monitoring system. Last month, Denver police used low-tech, handheld video cameras to catch rowdy partygoers celebrating the Colorado Avalanche's Stanley Cup victory. We haven't discussed it, said Denver Police Sergeant Tony Lombard. Not at this point. Well, no, they haven't at this point. But I'm sure somebody's thinking about it. Just because they haven't discussed it doesn't mean they're not. So what do you think about all this? Give me a call. 518-276-6248 is the number here at WRPI. And I'd like to hear from you if you want to talk to me about that topic, any previous topic, or any other topic, or any topic that I might be about to bring up. Maybe you're psychic. Maybe you know what I'm about to say next. Then again, maybe you're not. Either way, please give us a call. Area code 518-276-6249. It appears we have a caller. Let's bring him on. Caller, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, accepted your invitation.
Absolutely.
Are we on the air?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This is Paul in Rensselaer County.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, in line with the subject that you just brought up about Colorado and surveillance, more surveillance, if you had happened to see, I think it was a couple of years ago, there was a television program that was narrated by Stacy Keach about surveillance techniques. Did you happen to see that?
No, I'm afraid not. One of the things that about me is a little unusual is I don't actually watch very much television. Maybe 2 or 3 hours of television a week is it for me.
Well, I don't either. And it was just my luck that I happened to see it, because that's about all I watch, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a moment where I wasn't doing anything, and maybe, you know, I wanted to mention a couple of the techniques that the program was focusing on, and they were about mobile surveillance cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And the two vehicles that they showed for carrying them, there were several, but the basic shape of them is that they're a disc which looks about like, it's about the size of a compact disc, a CD.
Sure.
And they can fly. I guess they're remote controlled, and they have a camera in them. Now, if you were looking in the direction of this flying thing, and it were flat, if you can imagine, if it was a CD, they're so thin that you cannot see it. You can only see it if the flat, if the broadside is turned to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, when it's flying through the air, depending upon the color of it and the size of it, and they've apparently shrunk them down to as small as, say, a poker chip.
Oh, yes. Video cameras are very small these days. I don't know if I've necessarily, I'm ready to go with the flying CD-sized camera, simply because I think that its energy needs would not be able to be easily met in something of that size and shape, because flying takes a lot of energy. But I won't say that it's completely outside of the realm of the possible either. And I certainly would not be surprised to find out that somebody is attempting to develop such a thing.
Well, the program may have discussed the propulsion, the method of propulsion, and I don't remember, because after I saw it, I talked it up a little bit to see if anybody else had seen it, and nobody had, and since I didn't have any further conversations about it, it faded from my memory, but I haven't forgotten it, because it was so startling in general. But I want to add one more thing.
Sure, go ahead.
About toward the end of the program, the sort of the clincher of the research, and this is, you know, it was all about the research that is being carried out and supposedly the experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And parenthetically, I would like to add, if you don't mind,
not at all,
that if they are talking about on television, mind you, this is a main, you know, Stacy Keach, it was on a Saturday afternoon, so it wasn't really a big TV watching time, but
mm-hmm.
For adults anyway. But it was Stacy Keach, who's a big star, narrating it. And anyway, they said that this research is going on. Now, what that says to me, and I'm almost done with my parenthetical point.
That's okay.
Is that if they are talking about something on a television program on a Saturday afternoon as a research that's going on, as far as I'm concerned, it was implemented some time ago.
That could very well be.
Now, the whole thing wound up with this, which was that now what these researchers are unhappy about is that these disks they're too conspicuous looking. As
mm-hmm.
small as they are, and although they can slide right through a slightly open window, or they can slide underneath a door,
mm-hmm.
that is fly, and then prowl around the interior of any premises, you know, with this sending these video images. But they're conspicuous looking, and people, you know, can get wise to them, and I guess grab it out of the air and smash it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if it is the size of a CD, it is something that's reasonably visible.
That's right.
I mean,
or even a poker chip, you know.
Yes, exactly. But I will tell you what I have actually seen in person. This is not quite as high tech as what you've just described,
mm-hmm.
but still quite alarming when you consider the ramifications of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are these events that are held in several places throughout the course of a year. They're annual events. They're called Hamfests.
Mm-hmm.
They're attended by the amateur radio community and anybody else that may be of a technical inclination.
Yes.
And there's one particular vendor. They are located near Rochester, New York, and they go every year to the Rochester. They show up every year at the Rochester and Buffalo Ham Fests, which
mm-hmm.
I attend myself.
Uh-huh.
And they had, not this year, but last year, they had a video camera hidden in a clock. It was an ordinary-looking wall clock. It was actually an off-the-shelf wall clock.
Yeah.
But what they had done was this. If you look at the two on most of your wall clocks, it's usually written in sort of all of the digits are written in a sort of a Roman font.
Uh-huh.
And if you look right at the upper left-hand corner of a two, you'll see where the shape of the two kind of swoops around into a circle.
Uh-huh.
And what they had done is they drilled a hole through the two in 12 and stuck a camera behind it, and you got a fully unobstructed view except when one of the hands happened to sweep over it.
Sure.
And it wasn't a low-grade image either. It was very sharp. It was not up to HDTV standards, of course, but it was probably about equivalent to what any VHS VCR could record.
Well, once you receive an image, you know, you can enhance it by using other technology, so the initial image doesn't have to be that perfect, right?
Exactly, and this is where I was going next. I had done some work at one point in time that happened to bring me in contact with a company that does alarm systems and other security systems,
mm-hmm.
and the owner of this particular shop, it was a small local business, and was very proud of the video surveillance system that he had set up. In the middle of his waiting room, he had a smoke detector,
uh-huh.
and there was a table that sat right under the smoke detector. And if you put a piece of paper on the table, you could read it on a monitor someplace else. There was a camera hidden right in the middle of the smoke detector. There was a camera hidden in the exit sign in that same room.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging outside the building was a camera on a turret, which you could turn and point any direction you wanted to. And it had an incredible zoom factor on it. There was a highway maybe a mile away, and you could almost read the license plates off the cars that were driving up the highway.
Well, that's a good thing to have, huh?
Oh, yeah, really. And addition to this, there were some...
There's a license plate number bus.
Well, yeah. In addition to this, there were some more ordinary cameras strewn about the place, but there are some really scary cameras out there.
Okay, and this was... Who was it that had these? This was a private citizen, so to speak?
This was a private citizen who was in the business.
Okay, so...
Yeah, this was actually at his shop, at his place of business.
Okay.
But
was this a small operation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, you know, if someone... Now, unless this person is like, you know, Einstein in the rough or something, and has just managed to stay out there, rather than be co-opted by either some big outfit or by the government, then I think it's safe to say that if this outfit is capable of, I mean, you know, these are very, very powerful,
mm-hmm.
and very tiny and yet very effective surveillance techniques that are...
Yes, they are.
You know, these are obviously, if this person has them, I'm going to make an assumption that these are relatively widely available, that they are not things that are being kept under real tight wraps.
No, they're not. And I will tell you...
So the things that are being kept under real tight wraps is the question that kind of this program that I brought up was... probably referring to, but the thing is that the fact that the program came out means that they're not so tight anymore. That
well, yes. Now, as for this particular individual, he was a very, very technically savvy individual. He understood analog signaling very well, and had
so
a good background
like
in doing the wiring.
Hackman character in the conversation, right?
Sure, sure. But he was this was what he did for a living, was install systems like this, and this was his show off to the customer system. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
But now here's where it gets interesting, though, is not so much that there are cameras that are very small and cameras that are everywhere and that can watch every move in a room. That's disturbing.
Yes.
What's really disturbing is the recent development, and this was what was first revealed at the Super Bowl this year.
Well, I had one of those.
That they now have the ability to put a computer on the camera and have the computer identify people in the crowd.
Right. So that, you know, you... I understand. So that
it saves on manpower because...
Sure, in other words, previously the identification would have to take place later.
The computer was capable of doing this in real time.
No, yeah, I know. Now,
yes.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Previously,
the identification.
They would have to transmit the image,
yes.
And then the image would,
yes,
have to be identified.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Right. So I understand that.
Not
that's
only
a big
that,
step.
But
that's
it's
a big step
that.
Forward or backward.
It's not just that, but also with previous systems, you would have to have somebody actually sitting in a room full of monitors watching all of these things, and you have to wonder how often these people may have fallen asleep. You know, it gets kind of boring watching empty hallways at night.
Well, it's kind of a side point that brings up, which is, you know, it's interesting how no matter what these things may be used for, you can always count on that they will be used for at least two things, that they will be used to lay off bank tellers, telephone company operators, and probably, you know, by some it'll be insinuated somehow into the manufacturer of even automobiles so they can lay off assembly line workers and use more robots. But
this has, already begun.
Well, anyway, the other, at the end of the program, if I could introduce this as well.
Sure.
Because, as I said, they were unhappy with the vehicle that was transporting this remote-controlled camera. And so what they really wanted to do to make it completely inconspicuous was to make the vehicle appear to be some sort of an insect, a moth, a butterfly, even a dragon, or dragonfly, or something even smaller like a housefly.
Sure.
A common housefly or something like that. And some flying insect, in short. And the problem that they had was that, they made this statement on this program, I don't know if it's true or not, but because I'm not I don't study insect, but they said that in the field of aerodynamics, they had as yet been unable to, the people who studied aerodynamics had yet as, they had figured out how birds fly. But they hadn't been able to figure out how insects fly because the wing operation of the wings is different.
And the bumblebee has always been the classic puzzle. Theoretically, a bumblebee can't fly, and yet it does.
Right.
Listen, I'm running up against the clock here, so I'm going to have to let you go. But
they figured it out in Scotland.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Good deal. Well, maybe it's a good deal.
Time.
Maybe it's a bad thing. I don't know. Time will tell.
Well, it'll be used for bad things. You know, all knowledge is good, but it's, you know, but the way things are, it's put to bad use more often than not.
Righto.
So long.
All right, you take care.
You too.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded.
You've been listening to episode 12 of Little Brother, the show about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when they mix the two, and where. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. We're here to attempt to expose as much as we can about what Big Brother is doing to take away your rights and privacy with all his technology. We'll be back next week. You're listening to 91.5 FM, WRPI, Troy.
Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, and like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody.